What's up, wrestling fans? If you're looking for a visual accompany to our podcast, please be sure to check out the awesome photos at wrestlersarewarriors.com. Tony Rotundo is the photographer behind these photos, and he's a great friend of ours. His photos are amazing. Go see her for yourself at wrestlersarewarriors.com. Thanks again, guys. Whoa, we are back for the 15th episode of Home at Advantage Wrestling Podcast. I am Sam Herring, joined by Jude Swisher, and on a special occasion, we've got Cliff Fretwell from Georgia Compound on our
What's
episode.
What's up, gents? How you guys doing?
Doing
We're
awesome.
Doing great.
It's been my fault. I keep like telling you guys I'm gonna do it, and I've been traveling, and plans have been changing, and I've kind of hung out to dry, so I feel bad about that. But the good news is I'm in the middle of nowhere, Iowa cornfields, and I got plenty of time, and we're gonna get this thing done.
Oh yeah, let's just hope your service doesn't cut out on you.
No, yeah, that would be a big bummer. After all the technical difficulty problems we've already had. Wouldn't that just be awesome?
That would be beautiful. The cornfields will provide. The cornfields of Iowa will provide because it's a wrestling thing.
Always. All right. Well, hey, let's just start off talk about you a little bit, Cliff. Cliff, why don't you tell us about yourself?
So man, that's a broad question. I'm guessing I'll keep it semi-wrestling related and compound related. The gyms, we got two gyms in Georgia. One's a little bit south of the perimeter, about 25 minutes south of Atlanta. The other one's about 45 minutes north of Atlanta. One's in McDonough, one's in Buford. They're approaching 12 years old. And me and Lee Roper, who is the head assistant at UNI now, started them. He left, I think it's 4 years ago now he left to go to UNI. And Pete Yates came in and took over kind of as far as GM and head coach kind of responsibilities. And then the clothing company, Compound Sportswear, I think is approaching 6 years, maybe 7 years. Yes, it's been kind of a wild ride. The gym's kind of spawned out of this little nonprofit thing that we were doing called the GNWA, and it was my oldest son who wrestled and graduated from Indiana. There just wasn't a big movement with Team Georgia taking kids around the country to other national events. It was just duels in Fargo. So me and some crazy dads were taking our kids around the country, and then I wanted to do it on a little bit bigger scale. So we started a nonprofit and started doing little training cycles and charging kids like $150 to train for 5 weeks and get on a charter bus and go to Super 32 NHSCAs and stuff. And then we got kind of know a lot of these kids and travel with them for a while. And then me and Lee were like, man, I wonder if we could do this in the private sector. And at the time it was just TWA and Arturo. So there wasn't a lot of private training facilities in Georgia. And then he just kind of pulled the trigger, signed a lease on a building, got some mats, and, you know, here we are, you know, 12 years later, and got some pretty good kids. I mean, we've had a lot of fun with it. And I was designing the gear for the nonprofit, and a lot of people were like, because at the time I was working at an ad agency doing art director stuff on, like, Fortune 500 brands, so I would, like, design all our gear, and because I wanted them to look super cool and be able to market it well to everybody so we could get more kids to come. And then a lot of people started asking me, you know, who designed the gear and where did I get it. And I was just designing it myself and sending the art to like Brood at the time, and they were doing it, and I was just getting like local screen print stuff done. And more and more people started asking, and more and more stuff I started designing. And then a buddy of mine kind of like convinced me that we needed to start a clothing company. So yeah, long story short, yeah, that's, I mean, there's a lot more details, but yeah, it's kind of how it happened. So after a little while, I left the ad agency, started doing the gym full time, started doing clothing full time, and then my wife left the law firm and came over, and, you know, that's where we're at right now, just wrestling and cool apparel. So that's where we're at with that.
No, I'm wearing the Home Mat Advantage shirt right now. And you graciously made that for us, and it is so nice. I love it. I love it a lot.
Well, I mean, I think it's I think it was cool because Tony Rotundo actually reached out to me from the jump and was like, hey, you know, I want to help keep helping these kids. And I know, like, Jason Bryant's helped you guys and sent y'all some microphones and stuff. But, like, I think the community as a whole in the media side of it, like, appreciates what you guys are doing because it's tough to put yourselves out there and worry about people judging you. And if you're putting out good content or people are going to make fun of you or this, that, and the other. And that's why a lot of people in this kind of social media content driven world right now are scared to put stuff out there because they're afraid it's the wrong technique or they're showing it wrong and people are going to make fun of them, or they've said something on the show that somebody's going to make fun of them about or judge them. And man, you guys just hit the ground running with it. And they're just, right. Y'all got more, y'all started after me and y'all got more episodes than I do now.
Yeah. I mean, two things about that would be, like, from jump, like, Sam and I really decided, like, we don't really care about, I don't know, we don't really worry about that. Like, we're here just doing this for fun, and that if people listen to it and they like it, that's awesome. If not, we're gonna keep plugging along and just keep talking into a microphone, because the truth is, there's not a lot of kids our age who want to talk about wrestling at the level that we do.
What the byproduct is going to be is you guys are paving the way for other kids that were sitting back that were scared to do it. And they see you guys do it and be like, you know what? It's not that hard. And you know what? If those guys are brave enough to do it, I'm going to do it. And you guys are going to see over the next year or so, or a couple years, as you guys continue to do it, and you're going to get better every time you do it, just like riding a bike, that you guys are going to kind of pave the way for younger guys to start doing it. And not just wrestling, but people that are your peers. And I'm sure you got friends that are like, man, you got your own podcast and people talk about it on other podcasts and social media. And they're like, well, I like basketball, so I'm gonna start a basketball podcast. And you know, that's the cool part about what y'all are doing right now is you guys are putting it out there, and it's gonna cause other people to want to do it too, whether it's out of hate or jealousy, or whether it's out of admiration. But either way, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the cool part about it. So, yeah, it's cool to see you guys doing it and just not care.
Yeah, fun part, actually. Let's see. So we can stay on Cliff. We can keep talking about Cliff and just see where the conversation goes. Because really, we don't have a whole lot planned. Or we can move on to the Yasar Dogu, which happened this weekend. What do you guys want to do?
We can do whatever. I mean, I was in Colorado doing a camp, and then I was going to go home, and my wife already had plans with her friends. So I was like, instead of going home and sitting in an empty house and watching Fargo, because I had a camp in Iowa on Monday, I was like, I'll just change my flight and go to Fargo and then drive to Iowa. And man, I hadn't been to Fargo in 11 years, and it kind of made me want to start getting back in the game of coaching on Team Georgia and going back up there, because I don't get to see my club kids this time of year because I'm traveling doing camps as much, you know. But I think that you know Sam's doing the Young Guns thing, you're training at M2, like, there's just so much going on this summer. There's just so many opportunities for guys to get better this summer, man. It's crazy. And then, you know, like, so we got, you know, Dogu popping out, but like, I think part of the reason why our sport is getting so much better at a younger age is because, A, there is opportunity, but you know, the higher level guys like you guys and the training facilities are providing those opportunities, you know, year round. So, I mean, the future as far as for you guys, it's bright. It's very bright, you know. But I'll be honest with you. I watched a decent bit of Dogu, but I didn't watch all of it. I'm gonna try to get through the rest of it tonight at the hotel. But just from the outside looking in, we look like America just walked in and just kind of judo chopped everybody right in the throat.
Yeah, exactly. Funny, I was, you know, Zane and Yanni, the draws were released, and Zane and Yanni were, you know, first round, and I was like, oh man, I'm gonna get up and watch it. And I set my alarm for, you know, 3:55, and I sat my phone right next to my ear, and I woke up at, like, I don't know, 5:45 with the alarm just blaring in my ear over and over again. I just completely slept through it.
You subconsciously hate wrestling. That was your body.
Yes, I think.
Ignoring your alarm because you subconsciously like, hate wrestling.
Dude, this is your one day off. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys want to talk about Yanni Zayn?
I was the one that was extremely confident that Yanni was going to win. I mean, I'm a huge Yanni fan. But I mean, he's got more ways to win. Like, simple and plain, he's got more ways to win. And not that Zayn is one dimensional, but I'm personally on this huge kick right now about creative technique and creative mindset in technique and wrestling and strategy. So like Yanni is somebody that I'm just kind of like infatuated with right now with his style. Just because he's an innovator, just like Askren and some of these other guys have been, and not just from a scrambling aspect or a defensive aspect, just complete in general. Like even his offense is not the same as everybody else's.
Right.
He's got more options to win. So
I think the main part is that he has this kind of just crazy convinced mentality that he's going to end up on top. He's going to win. Right. And so that's how he can come from behind in 100 matches and he'll win every single time because he knows he's going to end up on top and he knows he's going to get it done and he's going to find a way to score.
Right. But a part of that's belief too. Part of that's belief, you know, I mean, and you guys are studs. And when was the first time, and this isn't an arrogance thing. This is a confidence and belief thing. But like, when was the first time, like you walked into a gym where you were ready to compete and you were like, you walked in and you knew you were the guy to beat, but you believed you were the guy to beat. Like, do you remember that day? Was it a definitive day or was it to just happen gradually over time?
And Sam, you answer first.
Well, there are definitely, I'd say it's much different. And, I don't have that belief consistently. If I walk into a Tennessee tournament where there aren't too many studs there or something like that, I'm going to feel like the big dog and I'm going to truly believe it. And I'm going to go out there and wrestle a lot differently than I would going to Tulsa or something like that. And I know that's something I need to continue to work on, but I definitely feel more confident when I know I've won this tournament over and over again. Tulsa, I don't always place and I'm not always the best one there. So I feel a lot less confident sometimes at the bigger tournaments.
How do you fix that?
More belief and more purposeful thoughts in my training, especially. When I train, I visualize and I start to believe. I believe why I'm doing this. The reason that I'm doing this is for a certain purpose, and that's so I can walk into a Tulsa and feel confident and go out there and win some tough matches and get on top of the podium.
Yeah, so that's interesting you say that because, I don't know, like 8 months ago, I was at M2 and I wrestled with like Levi Haynes, who's, you know, just made the Fargo semis. My entire life,
he had a crazy second round match, by the way.
Yeah.
It's the same one I'm thinking about. I tweeted about it. Yeah. Like 16-15 or something.
It was 15-14, and he was down by 8 in the first period and came back and won. Got ankle picked like 40 times. What was I going to say? Oh, so it had been my experience that, like, I'd go in the training wrestling room, and then I'd just wrestle more than people who were better than me, and eventually I would catch them. But since Levi was in there every single practice, we were always training together. It wasn't like I would make gains on him. It was like we would both get better at the same rate.
Right.
And so I was like just discouraged because I couldn't catch him. And I went to Coach David and I was like, hey coach, what do I got to do to catch those guys who are getting better with me at the same time? And he's like, it is just, I don't know how to say it, like, just dumb and stubborn positive thinking. Like, even if, you know, maybe, you know, you're getting just killed by the dude, but as long as you keep thinking in your head that I am better than this guy, I'm tougher than this guy, I have better partners, I have better coaches, I've worked harder, and just these endless positive thoughts. And he said, if you get a bad thought in your head, you shove it out of there and replace it with a good thought. And then that's where I really started to just develop this like kind of positive mindset that you just get into a habit of doing. So it's just a nice trick, I guess you could say, for that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a progressive way to do that. I struggle with a lot of doubt too, and you know, I did a lot of the work, and I did a lot of things the right way, and I didn't have doubt because I knew I cut corners. I had doubt just because I didn't practice being confident. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like you guys are talking about. So like, I equate that, and I've been talking a lot this summer at camps to purposeful work instead of just doing work, because a lot of kids go into practice rooms and do work, and they're not engaged with the work. They're just letting the coach kind of dictate the tone and what they're physically and mentally doing, and actually being engaged in it. And then when you're asking yourself, when you're warming up, you know, like, do I believe I can win? It's much easier because your brain is tied so much more intimately to the work you've done because you've been mentally and physically engaged, as opposed to just going in and putting in hard work until you get exhausted and then you crawl out of practice, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you guys are in an amazing situation to where y'all have great coaches around you like 24/7, and you got a world champ. And then, you know, and not to undercut Eric or Mark either. Those guys have done it at the highest level as well.
Yeah.
You know, so to be at M2, you know, like that's the perfect environment to not only get the highest level stuff, but they're going to give you Eric's going to give you a little bit different perspective on how to handle that than David would, because they took two totally different paths to be elite, you know, and that's one of those things too. Like, you could get real in depth about the mental side of it, but you know, that's one of the biggest things. Like, everybody in the top 15 in Fargo is really, 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 really good. But you just see those top three kids that just believe they're going to beat everybody. And the skill level almost might be equal, but that one guy gets it done every time because he just expects to freaking win. You know? And
So you're a coach. How do you, what do you think the best way is to train your wrestlers on the mental side? Because like, everyone can run kids through drills and teach technique and whatever, but how do you train them to be a better mental wrestler?
I mean, the same thing. I mean, you practice it. You practice believing, like you said, like, you can't score on Haynes, and you go in there and you're like, okay, well, I'm not scoring on him because he's technically better than me, or he's better in the positions that I'm good in. So today I might just go in and focus on learning how to fight. So I'm going to fight harder in these positions that I get to that he seems to technically beat me in. And then you start getting better at fighting in that position. And then you notice like your fight is increased, and you start getting closer to taking them down. So your confidence level increases as you've gotten closer and closer. And maybe it's weeks or months later that you finally get that takedown, and you're like, you know what? You know, I'm picking smaller things to focus on. I'm not coming in there and saying, okay, I got to take him down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, there you go. You're right.
Oh, you know, I'm going to focus on this real tiny thing. But, dude, like, we could talk for hours on how to develop mentally, but a lot of it's like, why are you doing it? Like, in the business world, they call it social sense, they call it your why. If you guys are pretty plugged in. You guys probably know who Simon Sinek is. He talks about your why. What is your core of why you're doing this? If it's strictly for gold medals, then every time you lose, you're going to be devastated, and it's going to be a major setback. You know, if you're doing it if you're doing it purely for happiness, and this was a conversation I just had with Roper at Fargo, like, there's a difference between happy and joy, right? Like, in my happy is results-based. So I get happy when I score on a guy at practice that I don't normally score on. You know, joy is something that I feel when I'm at practice, no matter what, if I love practice, because that's what I'm fashioned to do, right? That's what I'm built to do. That's what I like. So first and foremost, like, why are you wrestling? Are you wrestling to make your dad happy? Well, that's extremely problematic, because there's going to be a lot of different things that go into that you can't personally control. Number one, your dad's emotions and how he reacts to whether you're cutting weight right or eating or getting enough sleep or all that. We've all been through that. But I mean, it's a myriad of things. And I think as you try to be an elite athlete at our sport, there are specific things that you have to work on each day. And I don't think you work on every single one of them every day. Just right. Like you don't go in and work on your stance in motion, your leg attacks, your shot finishes, getting off bottom, all that. You know, you're specifically working on one area of practice, you mm-hmm. know, or one technical set of practice. Well, why do we do anything different with our mental side? As we know in the wrestling world, that the mental side plays a major role in how we compete, perform, train, progress, grow, then why is that any different? You know, it's not. You just have to understand it. But you're gonna understand confidence and your perspective on confidence and growth and things like that is gonna be different. Again, as a coach, you think something way different. So that's where the science of coaching comes in, to where you gotta know your athletes. You know, you gotta know your athletes. You gotta know what makes them tick.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. That's really hard to do. All right. Sam.
I say
we talk Yazar Doju. Yazar Dogu. Yazar Dog. you're like, thank God. Can we just talk about the Dogu already?
We can call it Yazar Dogu.
Yeah. Talk about Dogu, Sam. Or however you say it.
I will personally call it Yazar Dogu for the rest of my life, and no person will change it.
I'm gonna go on Google and see how they pronounce it.
Okay.
It's
Yazar Dogu.
It's supposed to be pronounced
Yazar Dogu.
Like the J is silent, so it's just yes or no.
All right. Yep. Okay. Hey, so let's start. Green, James Green. He went down round one, and then did the dude not get pulled back into repechage, right?
Yeah, he did not get pulled right back. He did not get pulled in because the guy had to make the semifinals because. It wasn't even round one, because round one was the quarters.
He
went down the qualification round.
Like, pigtails, kind of.
Yeah, like a pigtail.
Man.
Well, they lopsided the brackets and international. Yeah.
I don't get that. I also don't understand having 2 third places. Like, what the heck?
And we never will.
Yeah, there's some head scratchers, but I mean, it's the world we're living in. It's not like they just changed it yesterday. You know, it's kind of one of those things. Like, if you talk to the highest level guys, it's like, it is what it is. We got the best rule set. The brackets are wonky. The good thing is they got the ranking series is now, you know,
that's nice.
So that's better, you know,
except the system is still a little bit fraud.
Yeah. Well, then you can complain about your Mizo, but, yeah, it's tough, James, not getting pulled back in. You know, I mean, that's the international wrestling life. You drop one to a guy in the first round. And I didn't see that. I saw the highlights of that match. I didn't see the whole match. I mean, we know James
there weren't
the
too
best
many
guys
highlights
in the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There weren't too many highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. So who all went the first day? So it was...
it was just James Green.
It was and four small... Molinari,
yeah,
there too.
Yeah, Molinari.
And then Forrest. And then second day was what? Yanni Zane. Ringer.
And then Ringer and Gwiz.
Gwiz. And then day Yanni, three was.
Was Snyder Burroughs.
Snyder.
And Cox Burroughs.
Burroughs. Dragon Hawk.
And then there's one more. Hold on. I don't know why I'm blanking on him.
Pat Downey.
Three.
Pat
Downey the Dragon Hawk.
Funky Bunky.
Man.
Funky Bunky.
The Dragon Hawk.
I love that. Hey, let's talk about Downey a little bit. So, obviously, we're all pretty biased, but we can definitely see that was a bad call when they were going off the side of the mat. And Downey kicks the Indian dude over him, and it lands on top of him. Like, he obviously initiated the move, but do you disagree?
Yeah.
How do you jump over a dude when you're running a, what is it, like a head inside single or like a high crotch?
It was a blast double from Punia, and
I'm pulling it. I'm looking at this sucker.
Yeah, it was a blast double, I think.
Well, here's where it comes to initiation versus counter. And the issue that I see with that, and I wanted to be Downey's points all day long, obviously, but the way I understand the rules, you cannot counter in the zone. So if I start on one side of the mat and I double leg you all the way to the other side of the mat and we get to the zone, even if I control your action, turn it into my own and make it a counter, according to the rules, the way I understand them, you cannot be countered in the zone. Now, if that would have been in the middle of the mat, different story.
Then yeah, Downey's points all day.
Right. Okay. But the way I understand it, you can't counter in the zone, even though I saw a heavyweight from Tennessee, this kid who was wrestling the Fargo finalists from last year, and it was actually a pretty good match. I think it was like 2-1. His last name's Howard. I can't remember his first name. But he's a heavyweight. He's like 16 years old. Just
is it James Howard?
Yeah. And he's wrestling. Okay. You're a Tennessee boy, Sam. So he's wrestling the Fargo champ from last year, and James pushes him to the edge, and the kid lat drops him, but he goes flat to his back first, kind of pauses for a half second, and then kicks him through, and they reviewed it and they first scored it for the Fargo champ, reviewed it, and then still gave him the points, which I thought, again, that's the complete opposite of what I understood Downey's situation to be, which is a counter in the zone, which is not possible.
Downey did start in the zone. His feet hit the zone, and Jude, you were right. It was a single leg that he finished like a blast double. He had his head in the middle and started running through it straight on. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the Instagram video right now, and yeah, he's running it, and then it doesn't. I can't really see if he's in the zone or not, but like he runs his feet. Yeah, definitely. That's such a bummer because he was a sick roll through.
I mean, I like the no counter in the zone for a couple reasons, because usually when you're countering in the zone, it's probably more a YOLO counter than it is like a sit the corner crotch lift type thing. It's like, hey, I'm getting ran out of bounds into my grandma's lap in the stands, I might as well just try something, you know.
Right.
So that awards the guy that's trying the action in bounds, but you know, there are counters, but I like it the way with no counters in the zone. That way, guys are wrestling in the center of the mat, or counter them in the center of the mat. Don't wait for it to get to the edge and you have to call audible.
don't let them get in on your legs. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's
the easy.
Yeah, that's the easy solution. Hey, bud, don't let them touch your legs. But that was a bummer for Downey. But I mean, the beautiful part of that is, and he said it in the interview, you know, nobody's ever put effort into him like everybody's putting effort into him now, not even from the NJRTC with Reese and all these other guys, but
with the OTC and everything.
With the OTC and the resources and the national team. It's like, love him or hate him, you want him to win, you know? Same thing with Gilman. So they're going to get all the resources, and he's only going to get better. You know, I mean, unfortunate situation for him. You got DT sitting in the infirmary getting better, and he's coming back stronger than ever. But you know, right now he's our guy, you know, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think that Downey, I don't think World Team Trials Downey could have placed fifth at the Dogu this year.
Right. Obviously he's made huge jumps, you know, just from getting the full focus of USA, like our USA wrestling staff, because he's our rep, and we gotta get him up. I don't know.
Yeah, I like the story. I mean, I'm a under kind of guy, anyways. But man, again, like being the coach for as long as I've been, I'm pretty sure I just killed a bird with my windshield. I'm dead serious. I just smashed into a bird.
Oh my gosh, dude.
That's awesome.
Great work.
Guys, don't you
let me clean the windshield right quick.
Don't do podcasts and drive.
Yeah, that was awesome. What was I saying? I mean, the beautiful part of our sport is like we have a bunch of cool storylines, right? And like I'm always really, really blown away with how wrestling changes people's lives, whether it's like you guys who come from a normal household and like this, that, and the other versus somebody who might have never had half the stuff that you guys have had growing up as far as structure and opportunity and that, and people still figure out a way to get there. You know what I'm saying? Right. So like everybody hated on Downey and he was out of pocket a bunch and he still maybe is every now and then, but like the dude just kept showing up and the dude just kept working and he started making adjustments and he put himself in the right spot at the right time. Whether David got hurt and wasn't there or what if this, that, and the other, he showed up, he scored more points than everybody. He wrestled everybody he was supposed to. And that's a cool story, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's a very cool story.
Whether he goes to Worlds, he goes 01, 02 barbecue, whatever, you know, I think it's a great story. And those are the stories that I think are awesome in our sport. But, you know, do I want him to go win freaking world title? Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go get it done. Yeah,
I'm with you. I'm with you. Funky Bunky for life.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. So Zane's okay, about his injury. I think they said that he was going to be back in like 12 to 14 days. He's not hurt. I remember.
Bader tweeted that, right?
Well, yeah, I think so. And watching the match and when he got up and like limping, I was like, oh no. Cause I mean, I love Zane and man, that's be so bad if it was hurt.
Well, the weird part about that was you knew where Yanni was going. As soon as Zane kind of sat the corner and got his back, Yanni stands up, he walks to the edge, and everything landed on Zane's shoulder. So when Zane started kind of wincing, I'm like, oh, he might have popped his collarbone or something. And then they were like, no, his leg's hurt. And I'm like, I really wasn't ever paying attention to his leg. And I went back and watched it again a couple times. And like, I never really saw where like, maybe when Yanni cartwheel, Zane's leg got locked out or something. So you guys might have seen something I didn't see. But it looked like if there was going to be an injury in that exchange, it would have been his neck or his shoulder area.
But, I would totally agree.
Yeah, I don't know what happened in that exchange.
What I saw, somebody posted, I think it was a GIF as a comment to one of Flo's videos or something, was Zane was fine, and as he was walking back to the center, he hit his knee went bent weird or something as he was just walking.
Huh.
And he was walking fine, and then halfway to the center, he went down and grabbed his knee, and he was kind of limping back to the center.
Man,
kind of weird.
That could have been a delayed thing where it happened earlier in the exchange, and it didn't catch up with him until he stood up and put full weight on it. But
yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, Did I want to see match three? Yeah. Do I want Yanni on the team? Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Yanni fan, but like, do I want him to be on the team that way? Absolutely not. I don't want him to be on the team because somebody else is hurt. But I guess time will tell. I mean, I hope he's okay. I mean, because either way, it's kind of this Dake Ringer situation. It's like, hey guys, I get it. You're trying to get healthy, but like, we need to get on the same page of whoever's going to be on the team, and they need to be fully focused on training and getting a world title, not training for to make the team. You know what I'm saying? Because your mindset changes. Right. And those guys can say, no, I'm training to win a world title, and like, I'm going to beat Dake if they put him in front of me and I have to wrestle him. And Dake can say the same thing. But like, at the end of the day, if you know you have to beat a guy to even go to the Worlds, that's in the back of your mind. You can't completely focus on Worlds. And I think that's one of those things is where as a fan, I'm frustrated that it's drug out as long as it has, because Dake nor Ringer can fully be at peace and train for Worlds because it's still looming of who's going to be the world team member.
Right.
So that's where injuries and some of this, you know, gamesmanship, so to speak, from Dake, kind of is throwing a monkey wrench and stuff. But I mean, not that either one of those guys are going to show up ill prepared. It's just, we want every edge we can have. Right. You know?
Right.
So I just passed over the Minnesota-Iowa border, guys.
Heck yeah.
Welcome to Iowa! Woo!
Wrestling country.
Dude, what
I'm dragging you... I'm dragging you guys through the countryside with me.
What if you hit a hawk with your truck?
I would just keep killing bigger and bigger birds as I went.
All the way up to Golden Eagles.
Yeah.
It's just like Jude to say that Penn State homers, like, what if you hit a hawk?
Dude, please hit a hawk, man. That would make me so happy. Just kidding, y'all. Okay.
I killed a hawk, a lion, a pterodactyl, all kind of stuff.
Dude, he's on a rampage. Someone stop this man. All right, so do we have any more thoughts about the Dogu? We got some good questions. We can move on. We've been talking for about, I don't know, 30 minutes here.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it. So, like, we got a good rhythm there. So we covered Green, not the best showing ever. But we've seen Green kind of be a slow starter in tournaments before. Right. We talked about Downey. You know, he just needs more time in those tournaments, so to speak, and wrestling those styles. We could talk, I mean, Snyder looked good. He didn't smash everybody. He didn't smash in the finals.
Oh, 2-1, right?
Yeah, it was 2-1.
Yeah.
Which guys are figuring Snyder out a little bit, but he'll evolve. He's still so young. Jaden Cox probably was the most impressive of all. You know, everybody's talking about him just being a completely different stratosphere right now, which we talk about Dake Ringer. We talk about these other guys. I talk about, you know, guys nipping at the heels of our A guys. You know, talk about Jaden going up and challenging Snyder. Like, that's a thing now. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could say all you want, dude, Snyder's the man. He's done this, 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 and this. Well, dude, Jaden Cox is quietly destroying everybody.
So, here, I have a question. And listen, everyone knows I'm a Penn State homer, but this is a legitimate question. Where does Bo hasn't been teched by Jaden, right? Where does Bo line up in the world rankings?
I mean, this is the way I would look at it because I'm a huge Bo Nickel fan too. I'm not a huge Penn State guy. Pick my spots with Penn State, but I think Nickel's got to go wrestle overseas before I attempt to throw his name in the hat because
right.
He's wrestling a couple domestic guys and we know he's good. But, like, it's the same thing with Downey. Like, we need to go see them wrestle the European guys and get that feel and still be successful and not just be successful domestically against our national team guys. So
that's why, like, doing this U23 thing for Bo Nickel is going to be really good for him, I think.
100%.
I agree.
100%. Well, I mean, it was right unfortunate now, he bumps the guy.
Yeah.
Right now, wrestling strictly domestically, Bo Nickel's ranked 12th internationally.
Oh, wow.
And I think that came because I think Hayden Zilmer was ranked 12th. And so when he beat him up, I think he took that ranking. Hayden Zilmer's ranked 13th right now.
Whose rankings are those? Flo's or UW?
Yes, this is Flo's, so Seth Vitar. Seth Vitara.
Yeah, I don't know if he's doing those anymore. It might be somebody else. But either way, like, yeah, I need to see him compete. And like you said, Jude, I think seeing him compete U23s is perfect. Is he probably gonna win? I mean there might be one or two guys that'll pop up that are 30 years old wrestling U23s that are gonna give him a go, but yeah, does he have the talent level to win world medals? Absolutely.
Sure.
We're deep, you know what I'm saying? We're deep with that. But until he does it, like improves it, then you know, you gotta go with who's there. You know,
you gotta how long do you think Jaden's gonna stick around? Do you think he'll be another Olympic cycle? Or how long?
I think he's young enough too. I mean, but it all depends on your want to, right? Like, just like you guys. I mean, if you don't wake up chasing greatness every day, then that flame kind of dies out. So, like, a lot of these guys, it's not just wrestling. Some of these guys are having families now, and they got other responsibilities. You know, like David went from college athlete. The only thing he had to do was focus on wrestling. Now he's got the training center. He's got employees. He's got a wife, he's got 4,000 kittens. She's got a business.
I was gonna say that.
You know what I'm saying? She's got a business. You know, life happens and it takes away from the purity you had when you were in college when all you had to do was focus on pretty much sports and some academics, you know. So I think a lot of that depends on where Jaden's life is after the Olympics. Does he I don't want to say complicate it, because it doesn't necessarily have to complicate it, but what other factors are pulling him away from it or keeping him in line to continue to go? But I haven't seen too many interviews where he said, you know, I'm just going to see how this next cycle plays out, and then we'll go from there. Kind of like Burroughs has kind of alluded over the years that 2020 is probably my end point. But, you know, if he shows up and throat punches everybody at Worlds or and Olympics, man, you got to think in the back of his mind, he's like, hey, you know, I might give this another go. But,
right.
You know, so I think it depends. I really do.
Hey,
I hope he does. I hope he stays around for another cycle, because who knows what the weights are going to be then. You know, who knows?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's word that Greco might go away in the next 5 years, and that might open up new weight class, more weight classes for freestyle and women, but, you know, which would be great. But we also know that they don't like making rules that help out America, and the more weights that they make, the more we're going to show up and gunsling them, so...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's how it is. Let's see. Oh, hey, that's a good segue into we can talk about Jordan Burroughs a little bit. I thought he looked on fire for the most part. What do you guys think about Chamizo?
That's you, Sam.
I'm disappointed. I think he is doing what's best for him, and I think he is not. I mean, he wrestled JB at the World Championship for the bronze medal match and wasn't able to get to any offense and was totally shut down and everything, pretty much.
Right.
And
what was the final score JB at the World Medals?
3-1.
Yeah, it was 3-1. It was a close match.
Very low scoring, but he wasn't able to get to any offense, which really his offense is defense. But right. JB finishes shots really fast and just
you said JB's offense is defense?
No, Chamizo.
No, I meant Chamizo's. Whoops.
Okay.
I meant Chamizo.
No, you didn't JB's say it. I was trying to clarify who you were saying. Like, no, I agree with you 1,000%. Chamizo's offense is definitely alien defense, 100%. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Everybody go ahead, all right?
Yeah, I cut you off, Sam.
No, that's fine.
Keep talking.
In March at the Dan Koloff, Burroughs beat him like 9-3 and totally killed him. And I think Chamizo's confidence has gone down against Burroughs. And he had the 1C if he just forfeited. So it was too easy of a way out for him. And, I mean, especially in this bracket, like if you're Schneider or Sagulayev, the difference between 1 and 2 seed is nothing, really. Because the difference between the 3 and 4 seed is very little. But in this bracket, the 3 seed was Sitikov. So it was a big deal to get the 1 seed. And the fact that Chamizo did that, I can kind of understand he's doing what's best for him. But from my standpoint, I'm really disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, but we gotta ask ourselves, are we mad at Chamizo because we didn't get to see the match, or are we mad at Chamizo because he didn't give Burroughs opportunity to be the 1 seed, you know? And I didn't know how the points were going to play out as the tournament started and who needed to finish what. But, you know, as a fan, I'm disappointed in both. As a somebody who looks at wrestling from a business aspect – and a professional athlete, it's their livelihood. That's what they make a living doing. Like, they got to do what's best for them. And I tweeted about it, and some guy was like, well, I was like, professional athletes sit all the time or hold back for a playoff game or heal up or whatever. And, like, you know, wrestling just seems to have this massive public outcry. Like, Chamizo is obligated to the sport of wrestling to wrestle Burroughs at this event, and it's a travesty that he didn't. Chamizo has an obligation to do what's best for Frank Chamizo. You know, so, right. I mean, in that aspect, I got to respect him. He got his number one seed. He's not going to give Jordan another touch of him. And it is what it is. Do I think the outcome is going to be any different the next time they wrestle? Absolutely not. I think Burroughs is counter offense, even though that's not his game. And you saw it against Gore, like, it's only getting better. He's getting even tougher to take down, you know? Right. So, like, what do you do against a guy who's got some of the best offense ever in our sport, and he's getting to be some of the most untakedownable positions, you know, like that, right. That's a scary human being right there. So
you just give up. Don't even wrestle.
You get almost taken down three times, and then he takes you down, and yeah, and then you're just demoralized. So, but, so did, what was the score with Gwiz and Akul? I had that match queued up and I missed it.
I missed it.
I believe
too.
It was 6-2.
6-2 Akul?
Yes.
Yeah. I think he's just got a little too much for Gwiz. I want to go back and watch that match a couple times and just see. But again, man, that's another weight right there where, dude, there are some hungry dogs waiting in the wings right now.
Yeah.
You know, and Gwiz is a savvy cat, and he proved it, and that's why he's our guy. But no cap, man, those guys that are coming behind him, man, we got some freaking, you know, Kirk Fleet and Gable and some of these guys that are coming through. It's going to be extremely interesting when those guys really, really start putting in full training cycles, which might be at the end of Gwiz's rope anyways, you know, as far as age goes, depending on how long those other guys stay in the cycle. But I mean, how do you guys feel overall coming off of Dogu, like seeing our guys, like what are your biggest concerns? What are your biggest like reliefs?
I'm incredibly confident in our team. It's we're looking so good. Like, I think one thing would be, just Downey. He just needs it's a work in progress. Like, he's coming along is what I'm trying to say. But everyone else looked really good. Sam, what'd you think?
Well, I'm actually writing an article about, kind of recapping the Dogu from USA's standpoint. So kind of what we learned from it.
Nice
and,
plug.
That'll be coming out soon.
Up on HMA Wrestling.com. Nice plug. Nice plug.
Thank you. And basically what I'm thinking is obviously Downey is huge that we get just to see where he's at and what he's able to do right now and how much he has to go. And then I hate to say it, but it makes me feel less confident in 65, the fact that we don't have the guy that's doing the best right now out there. And it makes me feel bad because I want to support Zane so much, and I should have been wanting him to win at the Dogu, but it really hurts because I want to watch Yanni go win a world title because he's proved he's the best, except at Final X. And so it really hurts to have that split.
Keep talking.
Okay. I'm going to switch topics if you so.
It's all right.
You want to say something regarding Zane Yanni?
Regarding Zane. No, I don't really have anything to say.
Okay.
I was going
to say. You need to reply. Hey, do not let him throw that Penn State 8 out there without replying to you. Don't let him bully you on your show.
That's right. Jeez. I think that Zane, so right now they're split. It's 50-50. You know, it was whatever you could say about match 2 at Lincoln or at Rutgers. Zane's hand was raised twice. That is the definite overthink. So it's 2-2. Yanni's beating him at two different venues, and Zane's beat him twice in the same night. You know what? Yanni has more ways to score. Yanni has all this stuff going for him. But Zane is our guy, and you know, I know what you mean, being like sad that we don't have maybe the best guy. Is that what people think? But I have faith in Zane. I happen to think that Zane looked flat against Yanni. Like, they wrestled really, really hard. Here's a point I noticed is that they wrestled extremely hard. Like, you know, it's common, I don't know how to say it. Like, it's what they do. They don't necessarily wrestle hard the entire 6 minutes.
No. They set a couple traps.
Exactly, exactly.
And they'll catch you when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. They wrestled at an extremely high pace. Yanni and Zane wrestled at a crazy high pace the whole match, which was great.
Right. But I think Zane had a game plan, an initial game plan for Yanni, but he never got past the first two or three steps of it. He just kept, he would attack with that right hand, and he would step, and he would step, and he would attack with that right hand and collar ties, and Yanni ended up timing his steps. And you know what it's like when you wrestle the same guy over and over and over again. It gives you have an idea in your head of like what works and what doesn't, and especially if you're like on the losing side of that. If your focus is to beat Zane Rutherford, then you're going to analyze it and you're going to work towards beating Zane. Whereas it's harder for Zane to like try to keep Yanni away or try to build on Yanni. So, I don't know.
Let me throw this at you. Because the old adage, styles make fights, is one of the things that we love about Zane and Yanni, because Yanni's the more slickish kind of counter offense. It's not all counter offense, because when he wrestled Bajrang, he was all over his legs, right?
Yeah.
But Zane has always been the guy that pushed the pace and backed people up and broke them. And now with the style of freestyle, it's not as easy to do that. And that's why we've always struggled against the foreigners, right? Because it was tough to gas them, because they wouldn't engage in that type of fight, so to speak.
Right.
Now Zane is having to wrestle a little bit more in Yanni's world, because it's the more relaxed, you know, type of set your trap, move like water, Bruce Lee type of style and freestyle. And you can't just go out there and just beat the crap out of them with hand fighting and collar ties. And the counters play a huge role too. You know, so in a folk style match, you keep shooting and shooting and shooting, and then the stall calls come, and we have passivity, but like, you know, you saw it. It played a factor in Final X. Yanni kept sitting in the corner. Yanni kept taking all of Zane's really, really good attacks and just making them almost null and void. I love that saga. I wanted to play out, because it really does make people draw a line in the sand. You're either Zane 100% or you're Yanni 100%. I love that type of storyline. You know, you and Sam are going to be punching each other in the face over it 3 years from now.
Yeah, come to M2. Let's go, Sam. Be my partner.
I'll be sitting in the corner on you.
Right. Oh, I bet. think about this. So Zane's wheelhouse in college was his legs. It was his boots, right? Nope. He'd get on top, and he'd throw in double boots, and he would grind people into the ground, right? And he just wore kids out because his legs were just so strong, and he would just tire people out. Where in freestyle, it's all neutral 100% of the time. And, like, Zane's very strong and neutral, and he's very tough, and he's good at wearing people out. But coming off of a really, really good top wrestler transitioning into trying to be a really, really good neutral wrestler, it's tough. And so maybe, just in my humble opinion, throwing in legs on Yanni from rear standing maybe wasn't the best idea, because in if that was folk style, it would have been no points Yanni and 2 points Zane. So I don't know, just a thought.
But in your defense, Jude, not defense, but in the good part for you is you're starting to see Zane figure that out, because Oliver is a neutral scoring style, and he's done progressively better against Oliver, if I remember correctly. Maybe Oliver has more wins on him, but the last couple times they've wrestled, Zane is making adjustments. So, you know, even though a lot of people look at Zane as he's a little one dimensional in a couple senses, like, he's got some above average coaches, so like they're gonna continue to improve, you know, against all those types of styles. But even better on top of that, the better he gets at wrestling Yanni, the better he's going to be wrestling European guys, because Yanni gives him that feel every time they compete. You know what I'm saying? So,
and not even compete, that's like roll around in the practice room, right? They're going to be training together
I don't see that happening.
Not with the controversy going on.
Yeah, I don't. I think they stay
Jake and Ringer aren't training together.
Yeah, and Burroughs and DT and Dake didn't roll that much until they roll hardly at all until the weight classes split up, So, but yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you want them getting each other better, but that's like, again, there's a lot at stake, so I don't see that happening. But, so Let me ask you guys this. I'm gonna hijack the show for a second.
Gosh dang it, Cliff.
Yeah, man, no, that's what I do. So let me ask you guys this, because I touched on it earlier. You guys train at a high level and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Sam, you're homeschooled. And we were talking about that off air, that you get your work done. It gives you a little bit more time to focus on some other things, not just wrestling. Mm-hmm. But from y'all's perspective, because I have a coaching perspective, and I kind of know what different athletes progress at and do, and how their training should be structured in their life. But, like, what is the one of the more important things for you guys to develop, because y'all are around good coaches and you got good situations to get better? What do you guys feel that's some important things for you guys that are helping you guys get to an elite level right now?
So are you talking just like technically or mentally, or the whole shebang?
Anything that makes you guys have that progression to an elite level? Like you go back in the past to where when I was wrestling in high school in the early 90s, you know, versus resources, opportunity, whether it's competition, content, technique, like, and you guys don't even realize it right now. You're getting better at wrestling, talking about wrestling. You're diving deeper into the perspective of styles making fights and technical positions and guys making adjustments. So, like, even though you guys aren't studying wrestling or even in the practice room right now, you're getting better at wrestling because you're analyzing wrestling, right? So you're living in a different world. But I want you guys to tell me, what do you think is some of the biggest things that help you guys get to where you're at right now? Not that you guys don't have other levels to jump, but, like, you know what I'm saying? There's got to be a handful of things that you think are huge advantages for you guys right now that are on your path to be really good.
All right. So here's a couple things. So right now in the practice room, for the past 3 months, we've exclusively been doing neutral. It's basically all been on our feet, with like a couple practices for gut wrenches and ankle laces and things like that, but it's mostly been on our feet because that's where most of freestyle wrestling is. And so Fargo is wrapping up right now, and so then our practices are going to start transitioning into folk style. So the biggest takeaways I had from these past couple months, and it really started sinking in like a month ago, maybe, like I had been doing good, and then I had one bad practice, and like I just got killed by everybody, like just demolished. And David Taylor's there and he's watching me getting schooled, and I'm like, gosh dang it, like something has got to change, because what I'm doing, guys are figuring me out. And and then I just decided, like, I got to do basically exactly what they say. Like, I got to buy into the system, because what David Taylor's teaching us and what Mark McKnight and Eric Thompson are teaching us, this is the stuff that works at the highest level. This is the stuff that they did to get, you know, as good as they did. And so I was like, what I'm doing by myself is not working. I need to do what they do. And so that kind of turning point really just... it really turned around this last month or so. So
technical system and environment is what you're saying.
Exactly. And so just a, like, just, I don't know, listen to your coaches and don't do it by yourself, because like, sure, maybe some stuff works if you do it by yourself, but your coaches are the ones who have went through it all, right? They're the ones who know what they're talking about. So if you do what they say, you're probably in a pretty good position. And then one thing I would suggest, a good way to make gains on, you know, competition within America is top. Working on top. Because David Taylor's really good on top. At the NLWC, they really pride working on top. And Pennsylvania as a whole goes really hard on top. And so when I went to NHSCAs, like, I was even with kids on my feet. But then when I got on top, that's when it really started to grow. And it really grinds people out, like Zane does. So those are my two things. Listen to your coaches and work hard on top. That's really what I've been working on. What about you, Sam?
I'd have to say the thing, because I feel like, especially at my age, as I think as kids get older and start to get into high school, it kind of siphons out what kids are truly going to be good later on and what kids are starting to go down.
Oh, but you're right.
At this level in youth wrestling, everybody's being pushed by their parents and they're dragging them all over the country, but they're not really buying in. They're not really doing it, but they can still be good at it. So at this level, I think what separates me and what boosts me to the higher level is a love for wrestling and a drive that is my own. And it's not my brother's and it's not my parents and it's not my coaches. It's a drive that is mine, and it's a passion for the sport of wrestling. And I want to do everything I can to improve my wrestling.
Where does that come from?
I think that God has given me a passion for wrestling, and that's for his purpose. He's going to use that later on in life. But it's definitely not something that I had to develop. As soon as I went to my first practice, I loved it, and I loved everything about it.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. That's great perspective. And that's the refreshing part of a lot of that is everybody that's putting media and content and stuff out is guys that are 99% done competing.
Exactly.
You have some athletes, but like, so that is a very overwhelming perspective of coach speak or fan speak or analyst speak. And I think that's so important for you guys to continue to give your perspective on your experience, journey, progression, growth, opportunity lost in the sport, because you're given a unique perspective on where you guys are at in the sport, which is, Sam, what are you in, sixth grade?
I'm in sixth grade, rising seventh.
Right, and you, Jude?
I'm going to be a sophomore.
Gonna be a sophomore. So like you guys are giving such a fresh perspective on that. Like, that's important, you know, and that's one of the things that, like, I like when my athletes give me feedback and ask questions and things like that, because I don't want to just be like, this is the way we do it, don't think about it any other way, and you're gonna do it this way, and don't be creative and don't put your own spin on it. But I understand what you're saying, Jude, is there's a system, and learn the system, and then we can branch out from that.
Exactly.
David is a perfect example of taking a good core of what Kale was good at, and it's similar, but he put his own spin on it. Like, mm-hmm. Kale on bottom from a leg ride defense perspective wasn't near as aggressive as David. Like, David would literally put people's legs in on him on bottom so he could reverse them.
That's what David, projects onto us, is like the importance of doing leg slips. And he's like, this is what I did. And so I definitely get that from the coaching staff, is they have like this whole big overarching plan for us wrestlers at M2. And it started out with the first year was literally just 100% basics. You got to do the basics to do everything else, right? So it was like teaching us how to hit double legs. And I had been wrestling for like not 8 years. And they just taught us all over again, right? To just give us this foundation. And now we're starting to work on, right now we're working on just being mentally and physically tough. Like, it's a lot of our practices we're doing. Like, we just did a 45-minute go last week. We did a 45-minute go. And it's just mentally and physically tough. And so this is where you start seeing, Sam, like the guys who aren't in love with wrestling and the guys who aren't trying to get better every practice, they fall behind. And it's really, really evident that those guys are not maybe going to, I don't know, reach their ceiling if they have a different mindset. And now we're starting to transition into, you know, making it our own wrestling and branching off and doing – well, like, and putting our own spin on it. So
right.
Really,
that's cool. That's cool perspective. That's very cool.
Yeah. Okay, guys. We've been talking for 1 hour. I say let's let's
mega episode.
Dude, let's hit some questions here pretty quick.
All right.
We can call it a show. All right. Wrestler Never Dies is a cat fan. He asks, Sam, what would be your ideal location for this Southern major that Willie is talking about being a part of? So I think that's like, what, like a big Southern powerhouse school? Is that what Willie's trying to do?
So I went back and looked at it. It was something that Willie tweeted about. He wanted to make a huge high school tournament that is in the South. He wants to bring wrestling to me.
Nice. Just to you, Sam.
Just to me. What would you say, Cliff? Where would you want a big high school tournament similar to Super 32, or who's number one?
Hey, I'm not allowed to answer this question because I live, northeast.
Yeah, you're spoiled. So, yeah. I mean, obviously Atlanta. I was actually on a committee to get the NCAAs to Atlanta, and it actually got pretty close in the like bidding and negotiation process
there,
to get
Cliff?
The NCAA. You there?
Hey, guys, I think we lost Cliff here for a couple.
Both.
I'm
couple
here.
Seconds.
I hear you. Both.
Am I there?
Oh yeah, you cut out for a good couple seconds. You can continue.
Sorry.
You said it was getting close.
Yeah, well, so like I was on a committee for a little bit to, you know, with the NCAAs, get them to Atlanta, and working with the Atlanta Athletic Sports Association or whatever it is, and it was close, but never happened. Obviously, I think Atlanta's a great spot just for travel reasons, and we've had Dixie Nationals and some other stuff. But, I don't know what level of event. I didn't think he put specifically high school. Maybe he did. But I immediately started thinking about they were going to have one of their current events move it to the South as opposed to creating a new one. So I don't know. I mean, like, obviously I'm selfish. I would want it. But, like, in Atlanta. But, like, I mean, I love the fact that the Southern Scuffles at UTC. I mean, it's right up the road. You know, CMP Sportswear sponsors it, you know, because I want to be involved in it. And I want it to continue to be a high level event for a lot of reasons, just because in our backyard, but my club kids can go 2 hours up the road and see the best guys in the country, you know. So I think that's part of, you know, we need to continue that trend. But I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what event he was talking about, if it was an existing one or creating a new one. But if it's anywhere within 5-6 hours, I mean, think about, did either one of you guys go to World Team Trials?
I did not. That was,
yes,
like 12 hours away from me.
It's like, yeah, it's like 15 for me.
Yeah, so like, but that was a good spot. I mean, NC State
right,
did an
that was
amazing
great.
Job. The venue was great, and it was pretty well attended, you know, for the most part. Like, I was up there, and it seemed like it was pretty well attended, so I think the South can start to be included in some of that stuff. Now, if you're looking for a no-brainer slam dunk, then, yeah, Iowa and PA and places like that are great places to put it. You know,
or like
New Jersey,
yeah, for Rutgers.
Yeah.
And it was a zoo. There was a lot of people there.
And that's awesome. That's what we need. That's what our sports need. I mean, it's not like we're short on fans. We're short a lot of times on fan engagement and fan attendance. You know, I mean, like, could we get more fans? Absolutely. There's a lot of fringe fans out there. You know, and I talk to Piles about it all the time. Like, how do you get the fringe fans, you know, just to be a flow fan or a fringe fan to come to NCAAs or whatever it is, like the fringe people. We got a lot of fans that are already in our sport, but like a lot of them don't engage. They only engage when it's little Johnny going to a tournament. You know what I mean? And they'll watch some Big Ten Network a little bit here and there, but they're not on the level that we're at. They're not going to drive 3 hours and go to a tournament, a high-level Southern Scuffle type event. So we still got work to do, but I think the South has proved that it can support something like that, in my opinion.
For
Thank
sure.
You.
This is what Willie's tweet. I went back and found it. He said, excited to hear and be a part of a new major high school tournament in the South starting in 2 years. Will attract national level competition. We need a big major in the South.
Okay, so he did put that in there. Awesome. I mean, the Prep Slam at Holy Innocence probably brings in the most national level talent that I can think of. It's in Atlanta, and it's at Holy Innocence High School. I mean, is there any bigger ones where some big national teams come into Tennessee or North Carolina or something like that I don't know about?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, and he didn't say whether it was a regular season event or not either.
So, no, like, he didn't.
Disney is obviously the king in Florida.
Right. But,
Super 32 is pretty south for me. Just saying,
yeah,
guys.
That's North Carolina. Yeah, that'll be next for sure.
That's true.
I mean, Super 32 is definitely a. I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see what the greatest mind in wrestling has to say in two years.
Yeah. All right. Okay, here we go. Another question from Dyson Gould. He asks, which is more likely for Team USA and Kazakhstan, 6 world medalists or 4 world medalists? I believe we've already asked this question.
Oh,
or
we probably
answered
have.
It some earlier on earlier episodes.
We probably have.
Hey, I'm saying 6. I might say 7.
Oh, yeah. Here's what I've, like, Jaden Cox, Jake Derringer, whoever that is, Jordan Burroughs, Kyle Snyder, Nick Gwizdowski, Zane Redford, Dayton Fix. That's 7. And then not counting James Green.
Are we gonna say Gwiz? He just took a hard loss to Akgul.
Who is a 3-time world and Olympic champ.
Yeah, he's kind of good.
He's still convincing as a world medalist.
And he's already a world medalist, so that helps.
Right.
Too.
Oh, I thought the question was world champ. Yeah. World medalist, we can get a whole
6
bunch.
World champs. That will be everybody partying in the streets.
Oh, yeah.
I say, hey, let's do it. Hey, it doesn't sound like a bad idea. Like, just think about it. Team USA, just give it, think about it just a little bit. I don't know.
Free white claws for everybody if we have 6 world champs.
Nice.
No laws when you're drinking the claws. Yeah, I think that's doable. That's not me being America's super fan either. I think that's completely doable. So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Sure. Good question. Let's see. Felix Suskek? Suszek. All right. He asked us, on our men's freestyle team, who is the most likely to be a world champ? And if you had to rank them on a scale of 1 to 10, on who is the most likely to medal, what would be the order be and why? Jeez, this is a complicated question.
This one's really tough.
All right, okay.
Let's break this down into two. RL 1 week.
Who is the most likely to be a world champ? Most likely is Jaden Cox.
Yes, Jaden Cox. That's who I say too.
Jaden Cox.
Yeah.
Okay. Jaden Cox. Man, second most likely, I'm going to say, shoot, who are we?
I say Jake Derringer.
Or Derringer. All right.
Jordan Burroughs does not listen to this podcast.
I mean, he'll be mad. Actually, if Jordan comes to the podcast, that'd be pretty cool.
he's a pretty logical man. I'm picking 2 returning world champs over a returning world bronze.
Right, and especially because he still has... You know,
the same
hammers
guys in
the bracket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm going to, I'd go Burroughs 3.
Yes. That's what I have too.
And then I'd go Yanni.
Haters.
I'd go Yanni.
Over Snyder?
Yeah. Sagalayev, man. I don't know.
Yanni's not on the team.
Oh,
the Penn State homer.
I might have to edit that out.
Nope, you're not. You can't. No, you cannot edit live air. Oh wow, I'm gonna pull that little snippet out. That's gonna be.
Right, I gotta beat that sucker before Casey Cunningham hears this.
You are never going to Penn State.
That's it. I'm done. They're gonna kick me out of the NLWC.
Yeah. You're done, though.
Okay. Shoot. Maybe I should just close my mouth and let Sam and Cliff do this. All right.
That was great. Yes, Johnny's going to win a medal, just not this year.
Yeah, maybe.
I agree.
All right, go, Sam. Keep talking.
I got Snyder at 4.
Snyder 4?
Yeah. I mean, 3-time world Olympic champ. He's got Sagalayev. I think he has a great chance of beating him.
Sure.
He's only lost to Sagalayev once, whereas a guy like Gwiz or Zane's lost to Rashidov, he's lost to Aliyev, he's lost to all kinds of guys, and Gwiz lost to Akul, Dane.
Right, what do we think about Oh, who's our? I'm completely blanking on his name. Be Joe Colon, 61. Tyler Graff.
Tyler Graff. I've got him at 9.
You got him at 9? Listen, yeah. Tyler. Here, listen to this. Tyler.
How is Dayton Colone, six not
who beat Bonnie Rodriguez, who was the I don't know, world champion maybe. Also, yeah. What was I gonna say? DeSanto beat RBY, who beat Philippi, who beat
oh my gosh, here we go.
Who beat Fix. So
wow, you went transitive property like seven layers deep right there.
Just saying, DeSanto should probably be our rep.
Yeah. He put Yanni on the team. Might as well.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. All right. That would be epic.
That would be crazy. All right. Who do we, I think Dayton Fix should be high up there.
Yeah, I've got him at 7. Behind Zane and Gwiz.
No, Dayton Fix has a way better chance of winning a medal over Zane.
Are we talking, medal or... Oh, no, this is champ. This is world
this
champ.
This is champs.
Okay, champ.
Yes. I think he has, he has a better 100%. Chance of winning than Gwiz does, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
I mean, he kind of beat a world silver medalist, like, pretty handily. So it wasn't like he just beat the guy. Like, I mean, I know, and I'm not saying Cologne's Olympic or world medal was a fluke, but, man... Dayton's way more dynamic than Graff is, in my opinion. And Graff's wrestling is better than he ever has in his life. But I think you have to put Dayton up there for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And then behind Dayton, I'd go Gwiz. Well, I'd go Zane, then Gwiz, then Green, then Graff, then Downey.
Ending with the Dragon Hawk. You're a communist, Sam.
No, I'm just going off of logic.
Awesome. All right.
Communism's stupid.
Communism is stupid. Okay, guys. Let's see. We voiced some political opinions saying communism is stupid. We talked about Cliff Fretwell and his own wrestling and stuff. We talked about the Yazar dog. The
it's
U is silent. The U is silent. It's the Yazar dog. We answered some questions. Listen, this episode is like an hour and 16.
Love it.
Hour and 17. Very long. Shout out to Joe Cania for following me while the episode's going.
That's the man.
He's awesome.
All right. I think
he's the one who gave you the hat, by the way, June.
Yeah.
Gave you a flow wrestling
Joe,
hat.
I wear that hat all the time, and I'm scared to wear it into NLWC because. Because I don't know. I'm scared it'll get trashed or something. I don't know. I think that's a good place to end our episode, wrap it up. I don't know. Everyone's already following us on Instagram and Twitter. And for everyone who listens to us anyway. I would
Not
suggest
everybody. You don't know that. You got to plug it up, man.
Our Twitter is at @HMApod_pod. Our Instagram is @HMA_podcast. Our email is hmatadvantage@gmail.com. Guys, go check out our website, www.hmawrestling.com. Go check out our sponsor, Tony Rotundo at Wrestlers or Warriors. Huge shout out to Cliff Fretwell. You're the man. Listen, dude, we've been trying to do this for, like, forever. And then it's, like, one thing after the other.
Yeah.
And we finally got it done. I'm super glad.
Man, you guys are awesome. Like I said, what you guys are doing at y'all's age is very respectable. I look at it, and it makes me want to put more content out there and keep doing what you're doing. Don't worry about the haters and the guys judging you. Just know that you're putting good stuff out in the world and keep grinding and keep asking questions. Keep working hard, man. You guys are awesome.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Home Mat Advantage Wrestling Podcast. Anything else, Sam?
Yeah, go listen to The Hustle.
Plug my stuff.
And go buy a CMP shirt.
Go buy all the CMP shirts.
Yes. CMPclothing.com. Buy everything on the site. If you have a team, buy all your gear from CMP Sportswear. Yes, all that stuff.
Very high quality.
Yes, best stuff ever.
All right.
Later, guys.
Talk later. Yeah.